Welcome to the Applied Blockchain Podcast, where blockchain technology and innovation are in the spotlight. My name is Adi Benari, and I'm the founder and CEO of Applied Blockchain, and I'll be your host as we dive into relaxed conversations with industry experts and thought leaders to get their views on what they're building, the Web3 ecosystem, and its transformative impact on the modern world. Paul O'Neill, welcome to the Applied Blockchain Podcast. Just before we get started, I've got another guest with me, which is from the Applied Blockchain team, Andy Campbell. Andy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I'm head of product at Applied Blockchain. I guess the reason I'm on this one is we're using Intel SGX, which we'll talk about probably quite a lot on in the next half hour or so, for a couple of products here. So, have a bit of context. I look over two pieces of product for us, London Bridge and Silent Data, both of which are a bit on top of Intel products.
Okay, amazing. So I think this is going to be a really interesting episode. There's a lot to talk about, and people don't always think about Intel in terms of blockchain technology, but we think that there's some super interesting technology here, and that's why we focused on it, you know, especially for our product work and R&D work. And somebody who I've been working with on this, on the Intel side, is Paul. So Paul, please introduce yourself, give us a bit of background, how you got into all of this, please.
Well, thanks, Adi, for having me here today. First of all, it's great to connect with you. We've known each other for a little while now, and some very interesting things, I think, that you guys have done with our technology. But I'm Paul O'Neill. So I'm part of the what we call the Confidential Computing Group at Intel. And that group is focused on technologies like Intel SGX that we just talked about there. My background is very much pre-Intel, was very much startups, right? So I kind of, you know, company, the biggest company I worked for was like 150 people, and then we came into Intel. So from that perspective, trying to grow into that big company and that big corporation led me into sort of thinking and focusing more on emerging technologies inside of a large corporation. The first sort of emerging technology that we sort of focused on in sort of 2016 was blockchain, right? We remember that we had ledgers like Sawtooth, for example, and we had things, great innovations.
It was developed by Intel itself, right? That was an Intel project.
Yeah. Sawtooth was an Intel project, yeah. We had great technologies like proof of elapsed time, et cetera, et cetera. But the reason I say that is that that was kind of the genesis of, hey, you know, there's a privacy problem here, right? And there's a technology that we have called Intel SGX, which I'll describe to your listeners now in a second. And we can sort of marry these technologies together to solve a real problem, right? That was 2016, that's 7 years ago now, and we're still chipping away at that privacy problem at this stage. Applied Blockchain has certainly taken that, tackled it, and brought it to the ground in many senses using Intel technologies. But the emergence of blockchain for us at Intel was a sort of aha moment in this whole sort of privacy space and this trust space. You know, the concept of using technology to trust things that are going on, allowing technology to give you some trust on operations that are potentially happening on other people's machines, right? Where they can neither see or influence what's going on in that sense. So that kind of gave us that little jump into confidential computing, which is a sort of industry known term at this point in time. And in around 2017, maybe 2018, we started some discussions with some of the cloud providers, because the cloud providers at that point were at a point where they were going, hey, you know, trust is being eroded. We've had leaks, we've had hacks, there's been data out there. You can think of the Edward Snowden leaks and other bits and pieces like that. So the cloud customers came to us because we have this unique place in the ecosystem where we're looking up from the silicon up. And they said, hey, you know, our customers are looking for ways to minimize trust. And when you look at what, you know, all the scenarios for how data is being handled in a sort of public cloud environment and even in an on-premise environment, there's concerns around data privacy. Generally, is my data private when it's being computed on in the cloud? We want to do things like get into regulation and compliance, all that sort of stuff that's going on. GDPR came in, I think, in 2018, I think, right? So that sort of ratcheted down the sort of regulations and compliance, and that led to things like, you know, cross-border transfer, Schrems II, and all that type of stuff. but generally customer trust in the environment was eroding. So our technologies that we had looked at blockchain then all of a sudden became a solution to potentially allow for a trust level that customers could assert into the cloud, do some operations where the cloud could neither see nor influence that. Now that technology,
and that's regardless of blockchain, right?
That's regardless of blockchain.
Really just looking at processing in the cloud and hosting in the cloud.
But that also became super useful for blockchain technology then as well, the ubiquity of this technology within clouds, where, you know, blockchain companies could come along to clouds and build blockchain networks with a privacy layer already there, just using this technology. This technology we're talking about is called Intel SGX in its shortest term, right? Our Intel Software Guard Extensions, to give it its full legal term, a bit of a handful. But ultimately what this is if you think of what Intel does, right? Everybody, Intel's the first company I've ever worked for, or my mother knows what Intel do, right? It's the first one. Right, so you can
I can't explain to my wife what I do, and actually, like you say, it's a brand that people understand.
Yeah, even my father, right? So he drives past the Intel has a. I'm based in Ireland for anybody who's probably picked my accent up at this stage, but in Ireland we've got like 4,000 people working in a fabrication in a plant here. My father's able to drive past and go, you know, that's where my son works, even though I don't really work there. I work virtually, but it's a different thing. But anyway, it's from that perspective.
I'm originally from Israel, and Intel was one of the first, if not the first, big tech company to actually set up shop in Israel.
And Intel, by the way, is somebody told me recently, one of my Israeli friends, that they're the biggest employer in Israel, right? So
I can completely believe that, and I'd say that they're, you know, a big part of the Israeli tech scene and industry really started from that moment that Intel came in.
And the smarts of you know that come out of Israel from our security perspective is really, really high, right? So we started this journey, at Intel. Everybody knows kind of what we do. We build silicon chips, ultimately, right? Now, we do lots of other things, right? You know, we're massive contributors, open source, and all those sort of bits and pieces. But that's what we're known as, right? But on these CPUs, then, we're starting to build, you know, trust layers or, you know, robust things that go on top of that. And they could be, you know, the optimization of performance, for example. They could be lots of different things that go on. It's not just about the silicon. But when we think about, you know, how we can get the best use of this silicon from a security perspective, this concept of Intel Software Guard Extensions, or SGX, became, you know, part of this strategy to help, you know, blockchain companies do things in private, or basically enterprises do things in private on the cloud. And what it is effectively a trusted execution environment, right? And a trusted execution environment, it's really a piece of encrypted memory that sits on top of the silicon, accessed by a fairly robust SDK or some other methods in that. And really what you can do inside of this, trusted execution environment is do things like isolation, right? You can separate, the trusted execution environment from all the underlying software, the administrators and other cloud tenants, for example, right? So that means if, you know, some of the operating systems are poisoned by some attack or whatever, they still can't access what's going on inside this little trusted execution environment. People describe it as like, you know, we're traveling around with our passport. We put it in a safe, right? You can't see the safe, the hotel employees, etc.
Like a black box. I think of it and describe it sometimes as a black box inside.
Exactly. So you can't, it's like, hey, you know, I've got my favorite ring and I need to get it fixed by the jeweler, but I don't trust the jeweler, but I want to put it where the jeweler can't access it. So how do I do this where the jeweler can fix the ring but can't access the ring or can't touch the ring? It's kind of like that sort of a magical thing. But ultimately, it's encrypted memory. The size of these trusted execution environments can go up to, you know, half a terabyte. So that means you can do pretty extensive workloads in these. You know, in the blockchain sense, we need smaller ones, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all about encryption and control, right? So as we're building blockchain networks out, you know, the workload owner will hold the keys to decrypt data. It will retain control, prevent access by cloud providers, other entities, et cetera, et cetera. So that concept of encryption is really the pervasive part of all of this, right? keys and encryption. The other part of this as well, I think, Ali, this is a really important part and a differentiator maybe, as we maybe talk about other privacy enhancing technologies later, right? The thing that we can do with trusted execution environments on the silicon is that we can verify them, right? So we have a concept called attestation. And so really what happens is that when you take your workloads into these trusted execution environments, you can ask Intel, hey, Intel, is this machine the one it says it is? Is this machine up to date? Has it got all the latest security patches? Is this algorithm approved? You know, is the hash of this algorithm the one that we've proved to access this data set? And if all of those things fail, you can say, hey, we're not going to get into this this function at this point in time. And that's a very powerful tool for blockchain owners in particular, because then you get into, you know, how do you trust oracles? How can you test the certain machines that want to access smart contracts, etc.? So that's a very important point as well. So the kind of summary of what we're doing, you know, in this trusted execution environment is providing isolation, right? We're using silicon-based technology to create a hardware-enforced trusted execution environment where sensitive data is only decrypted inside of that trusted execution environment, and only software inside the trusted execution environment's trust boundary can access that sensitive data. And that creates that technological separation from the software and the admins outside the trust boundary, including, you know, whatever cloud management stack, hypervisor, etc. The second thing is encryption and control. So with this confidential computing technology, Intel SGX, authorized data owners hold the keys to their data, right? So outside the trusted execution environment, the data is encrypted, and inside the trusted execution environment, only the authorized software or parties can view it. Cloud providers, etc., can't access or can't influence the result of any computation there as well. And then that last piece I said, attestation or verification. How do you know that the trusted execution environment is genuine and functioning properly? Confidential computing technology includes cryptographic verification that the trusted execution environment is genuine, updatable policy, etc., etc. So that's ultimately the technology piece of this. And if I tie that back to the original story, blockchain had a privacy thing, cloud had a privacy thing. The two have become married, where this SGX technology has become almost a go-to technology for permissioned blockchains because of its ubiquity, effectively.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the journey that I came on. It's a long-winded way of getting to where I am.
Okay, no, that's great. I just want to play back some of that just a little bit, just to make sure we're kind of fully understanding it. So first of all, the privacy problem in blockchain, a white surfaced in blockchain, is, let's say before blockchain, the data is sitting inside an organization. And when we talk about data privacy, we're really trusting that organization to look at the data and to really manage and restrict how it deals with that data, right? And enforce their data policy within the organization. That's really what I'm trusting. When blockchain came along, we suddenly had these ledgers where data was being distributed to multiple parties. And so certainly in some types of blockchain solutions and environments, we needed a data privacy solution alongside that, or you know. And that really drove a lot of exploration that we did as well into cryptography in general and technologies like zero knowledge proofs, which are software-based cryptography solutions. But then they came with a lot of challenges. And then alongside that, we started looking at hardware-based solutions like Intel SGX, which we found that actually suddenly ticked a lot of the boxes that we needed and allows us to get to a place very quickly. So that's maybe on the blockchain side. Then looking at the confidential computing, my understanding of it is that you've got the cloud providers. Obviously, we're deploying applications to them together with lots of customer and sensitive data. And to prevent them maybe from having access to the data itself, a confidential computing solution would mean that the Intel hardware and SGX solution provides those guardrails so that actually even the cloud provider can't get to the data, because it's encrypted and it's in a place where the host can't access it, right? So that's in the cloud, so even non-blockchain solutions, that's how that works there. Yeah, is that all correct?
Spot on. I think I probably introduced the term confidential computing. We should probably think about what that is, right? I mean, so that's more of a macro term to describe some of the technologies that I've, one of the technologies I described there. As the sort of confidential computing world evolves, confidential computing really encompasses trusted execution environments by many different hardware vendors, right? So it's important to note that the movement of confidential computing is not just an Intel thing, right? It's AMD, ARM, others, NVIDIA are also looking at confidential computing and have confidential computing solutions, some good, very good confidential computing solutions, maybe different sizes, right? But not to go too deep, if I distinguish, this SGX is something that is really, really robust from a cryptography perspective and a protection perspective. Like you can reinforce, or you can do application isolation down to a function in your code, as you guys know, because you're right down at that level. But in some cases, enterprises want to use a VM. They want to encrypt an entire VM as well. So it's the swing from, confidential VMs right over to application isolation. So the term confidential computing is a large term, mostly cloud-based. But, as I said, Intel is not the only one in this. And, as we brought this forward, the Linux Foundation have taken on now the Confidential Computing Consortium, where all these players are part of as well. And there's a lot of blockchain companies that are part of this.
You joined that as well, actually.
Yeah, you're in there as well, right? So as part of the Confidential Computing Consortium, because the evolution of confidential computing is not just about, the hardware piece of it. In order for this to really grow, we're looking at how do we get attestation protocols built through this sort of thing so that attestation looks the same for everybody, right? Regardless of the underlying technology. If we think about how, this will evolve over the next couple of years, I mean, right now, confidential computing is really forming, I would say, right? And, a lot of cloud providers are on board now, but their roadmaps are all at different stages, right? So we're building this infrastructure as a service concept, really, when you think about, containers and, what we're doing with Kubernetes and bits and pieces like that. But ultimately, what's going to happen is that these cloud providers are going to come along and build platform services on top of this infrastructure service, and that's where the monetization efforts will probably focus. And blockchain is going to be one of the key workloads that they're going to build on top of these areas, right? So they're going to build capabilities for the likes of applied blockchain to just simply plug into these layers, confidential ledgers and stuff like that, which, as you know, Eddie, Microsoft have already done at this point as well. So the evolution of how this technology becomes part of a core network and platform services is really going to be the most interesting journey, I think, over the next couple of years. But that's not next year. It's probably 2 to 3 years out, I think, at this point.
Can I ask Paul, so we've spoken a lot about like the chip and the cloud providers, but what about like the kind of core use cases from like an application perspective? So what is it that you've seen kind of people that are building on top of what the cloud providers are providing? What use cases are they kind of hitting, or what do you think are some of the more interesting use cases that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, so the use cases are varied, but it really comes down to a couple of different areas, right? You could talk about different buzzwords and stuff like that, but if we compress it, there's a lot of work around simple things like cloud migration, right? So this is a really key area, right? So a lot of highly regulated companies, they just simply can't get into cloud economics because some of the data sets that they're using are just too sensitive, right? Are they GDPR infected or PII infected or whatever from that perspective? So, things that involve personal data, people are reticent to bring to the cloud. The regulations in Europe are pretty strict now, right? Around what you can and can't do, right? Privacy by design, a lot of people are using techniques like, pseudonymization. But when you get into pseudonymization, then you're getting into data that's not the native data. And then the key use cases like collaborative analytics or AI and machine learning tend to die a little bit from that perspective. But I would say, Getting that cloud migration is sort of the first area. And, you know, we see lots of really interesting things. Like there's a big company in Europe that's just migrated an entire stack to the cloud to do streaming TV, for example. So the streaming TV has all DRM built into it with SGX holding keys, but also to protect them subscriber data. So it's multiple pieces like that. We also see great, innovations with AI and machine learning. So, for example, you know, we've done a lot of work publicly with Bosch, for example, in this case, where, you know, Bosch is you know, looking at ADAS or autonomous driving algorithms, right? In order to train those algorithms, they have to take, you know, street views, people's faces, et cetera, car number plates, registrations, all those sort of, again, PII infected stuff. And when they're running their algorithms on that, right, so they have a choice, right? They can obfuscate or blur the faces and take those things out. But they do that, they're diluting the value of the data itself, right? Imagine, you know, the algorithm sees a plastic bag and thinks that's a blurred face, stops a car in the middle of the street and stuff like that. So they want to use the real data, but they've got the whole concerns around GDPR and all that sort of stuff, right? The other piece of this is that in their case, you know, they can buy a whole load of hardware to do this, and that's expensive. It becomes a CapEx cost, right? But by bringing it to the cloud, they can stop-start project-based. It's an OpEx cost, right, from that perspective, but the GDPR barrier is there, right? So what they do is that they encrypt all that, and they run all of that training inside of SGX OnCloud, so the data is always protected, and then you're getting into privacy by design, which, you know, GDPR likes and stuff like that as well. And then you're getting into protection against cross-border transfers and bits and pieces like that. So it became a very economical project, and B, a great example of how you build a confidential neural network running on, in this case, was Microsoft Azure in this case as well. So they're kind of a good sense of the use cases, I think, that collide down. Privacy preserving ad tech in this cookieless world that we're moving into. You know, people want access to first party data. That data is encrypted. They want to get that for targeted ads. And privacy preserving blockchains is still, you know, a big area. In fact, I would think that in the last year or so, that's significantly on the rise. I think as networks pop up, I think SGX is, you know, a good choice there, I think. And other technologies that will come out around confidential VMs may make it a little easier as well to do that. Yeah. There are other privacy-enhancing technologies, obviously, as well, you know, with homomorphic encryption and secure multi-party computation out there that are robust technologies, you know, based on mathematical trust. They're maturing, I think, but I think it will take some time for them to mature to a point where they scale, et cetera. But there are some excellent companies like Xama, for example, who are working in the blockchain space as well. So it's not all about trusted execution environments. There are many technologies, well, not many, there are, you know, some good technologies coming. And I believe at some point in time, it'll be potentially a combination of all that will solve this macro privacy problem that we have. I mean, so this is a real issue that we have to solve. You know, blockchain is a part of it. But from a cloud perspective, this is a real issue that we have to solve.
Paul, I just want to sort of, again, summarize a little bit and come back to the tech a little bit as well. So if I categorize these, then there's cloud computing in general, right, which is the cloud providers allowing you to host something where their access to the data is no longer available. And I guess primary use cases for that also include AI,
yep,
which you alluded to.
Yep.
And together with that, and also AI being part of that, is shared data, right? So data that comes from multiple organizations, which they wouldn't normally be allowed to share, or they maybe could only use together in an environment where none of them can actually access the data directly. And again, that probably comes back to AI as well. If you've got a shared pool of data, which has restrictions around it, then you can probably do some more interesting AI analytics and so on it without privacy constraints. All of that kind of falls into the, let's say, the non-blockchain cloud use cases. But also an important point, I think, again, from my understanding, is it's not enough just to say, here's a cloud application, I'm going to run it in SGX. A key thing here is the interface, right? Because if I say it's running on SGX, but actually it's fairly open in who can go in and go out, or who can actually get to the data, the fact that it's running in a confidential computing environment on its own probably isn't enough, right? It has to be, the interface has to be tight to the point where the parties can only do, or specific parties can only access the data in a certain way, and those restrictions are there, right? So there's a hardware and sort of standard component to it, but there's also a soft a layer around that, a wrap around that, that has to be done correctly, otherwise the privacy could be compromised.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So that's that part. And then the other thing I wanted to go back to is the attestation.
Just so the viewers understand. So with the technologies, viewers and listeners, I guess, with the technology, there's an SDK, right, to this. And yep. As we're looking at, I describe confidential VMs and I describe application isolation, there's a trade-off, right? If you want to get down to application isolation, where you're securing down to a function, there's work to do, right? This is not... That's why you have smart people.
Just throw it in a box. It's how can that box be accessed? Where's the hole for something to get in or out, right? Because there still needs to be something.
Yeah, but as you turn it up the other way, where you might want to do less work, but your security, your threat model is a little less, and your posture has to be a little less than, less encrypted VM. But in your world here, you've got cryptographic experts who can use the SDK that comes with SGX and secure that down to a function, right, from that level. And that's the type of work, for example, if you look at, the German healthcare's movement towards single digital platforms, right, for health, life insurance and all that sort of health insurance, that's all done with Intel SGX at an SDK level, right, really ratchet it down from that perspective.
Yeah.
So that's, just to clear that up, that's, for everybody. Now, you were going to talk about attestation.
Yeah, okay. So for the attestation, again, my understanding of it is we've got this black box. We can encrypt some data and send it in so the host can't see the data. Inside there, there's going to be some computation. And then the data is going to come out and somebody's going to receive the output. Now, when I receive the output, if I'm a user, because I can't see what's going on inside, I need some guarantees about what's happened to my data, that it's actually been computed in this environment, that the privacy has been maintained, and maybe that specific activity has been carried out on it and not other activity, right, which might involve sharing it, for example. So really, to provide those guarantees, we have this mechanism around SGX where we can have the source code or the code that runs inside SGX effectively signed by Intel, and that signature also signed, well, it's a, I think it's a hash of the code, and Intel is also signing the fact that this is an Intel chip and this is an environment that's running, this version of the Intel SDK, maybe some, I don't remember all the details, but it's effectively a wrapper that says this is what's running in the enclave. Intel doesn't actually see the code itself, I don't think, but Intel can sign and attest to the fact
we can't see or influence what's going on inside that box either, right? So there's nothing that we can do there. But what we can do is, if in a consortium level, take two big pharmas, right? Two big pharmas want to combine on a clinical trial, they'll approve an algorithm to do that. That algorithm will take a hash, and then using attestation, you can make sure that that's the right hash. So if that's the hash everybody's agreed on, that's fine. But what goes on inside that box, nobody can see, right? So to be clear about that, there are no back doors or any of this sort of stuff. This is the question I get asked all the time, right? Can Intel see what's going on in that box? No, right? So we can't do that. But to be clear, you're not going to open that black box until all of the rules have been approved. So you're going to tick the fact that, hey, it's a genuine CPU. You're going to tick the fact that the CPU is up to date security patches, because if it didn't, then you're vulnerable. And then you're going to tick the box that, hey, this algorithm is the one. And once those operations, or once those things are approved, then begin your operation. And not until
I'm not going to open the box. I'm going to send data in, and I'm going to trust what comes out.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. But that's the whole point, right? Once you trust in, you can trust out, right?
Yeah, I think I just want to come back to something you touched on a minute ago. You spoke about homomorphic encryption and MPC. We did a bit of an exploration, I think it was around 2019, 2018, with those different technologies. I think it's worth saying so far we've had a lot of conversation, I guess, at the technical level. I think for people not at the technical level listening to this, I think the thing that this kind of interesting with, or like some of the one of the properties that I think makes Intel SGX very interesting versus other technologies is when we talk about MPC, homomorphic encryption, also things like permission blockchains that have some kind of privacy layer. A lot of the time when we talk about, okay, how can we actually get value from this in like say a network of competitors, what it often means is setting up the network first, or there's like a large overhead, let's say, to setting up something like that, even with, you know, something like MPC. It's like, okay, so, you know, we've got this, let's say, kind of public good or industry good use case. So let's build that from starting from one of those organizations. That organization who wants to build that use case has to kind of get the other organizations on board, set up some kind of consortium, you know, and do an MPC. I think we'll do some kind of MPC, permission blockchain, whatever it is, with some privacy layer, whatever it is. I think one of the things that's kind of, that's very interesting, I think, from an enterprise point of view, from SGX, is that you get the economics of a SaaS model, right? You kind of say, okay, you know, this thing can run in one place. We can have one organization maybe invest
in the same everywhere, right?
Yeah, and then they can go and say, hey, look, like you can trust this thing. You don't have to trust us. You can trust
because we can't get to the data. We can't influence what's happening to the data either.
Yeah, that is the good thing about using. Sorry, one of the good things about using a hardware-based level, it looks the same, smells the same everywhere, right? So if you write an application for one, then it generally moves across. With SMPC or homomorphic encryption, you find that most projects become bespoke projects. But as I say, there are good companies out there like Xamarin and others that are looking at this from a perspective. And I think over time, you know, a collision of all of these, I think, will come. The other thing that we're seeing a bit of as well, guys, as well, is that the whole concept of a private ledger where the whole blockchain contains encrypted transactions, right? You know, where hardware protection for code and data is in that mode as well, where validation nodes, you know, share the keys to decrypt transactions internally, etc. You know, this type of blockchain we're seeing in some financial services sort of arenas as well, that an entire encrypted blockchain from that perspective. And when you get into that, then you're really getting into you need performance, right? So in all of this, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of your listeners that are listening here are going to say, these guys got on with this great technology, but what's the overhead, right? I mean, surely I'm going to get penalized for using this encryption technology and stuff like that. The overhead from a hardware perspective is not that high, right? It depends, obviously, on how you write your code and bits and pieces like that. But we work really, really hard on performance, right? Really hard on performance, because in the space that we're in, especially around the data centers, it's a hugely competitive space these days. It's not something that Intel, you know, takes lightly, right, the competition there. So running encryption is sometimes going to have a massive overhead, but we're chipping away at this quite a lot. And a lot of blockchain cases, you're talking about single-digit overhead to use a lot of this encryption thing. And overhead leads to economics, and economics leads to people making choices about what it is they want to do and stuff like that. And we do see projects that are stalled because of economics at this point. So this whole optimization and performance area around, you know, making blockchains run faster with the encrypted data is something that's high on our agenda to keep pushing forward here in time.
Amazing. Andy, do you want to say something about our products, maybe, and what we've done with...
Yeah. So, I guess the way that we've used SGX is very much on the kind of the level of not the VM virtualization. We've focused a lot more on kind of the SDK kind of level, where the trust assumptions we're doing tend to be very tight, because we're in
the application...
Space. Yeah.
Level, I think.
The application level, right? Right? Yeah. Designing for specific use cases. There's a couple of things we've built on top of SGX. So one is a bridge, a secure bridge between Alvarand and Ethereum. The thing that we're doing there is, one, we're generating the keys inside the SGX, but two, and this is the key property that SGX gives over, say, like a KSM, right? Key management service where you can generate your key there and you can not reveal the key, and you can kind of say, hey, sign this payload for me, and you get a signed payload back. The key thing with I think key management systems, they have their place. But essentially, because if I can instruct the key management service to do essentially what I want to do, I kind of indirectly kind of have access to the key, or at least have the access to the key, of what the key can do. So the way that we've used Intel SGX for our bridge is essentially we have a light client we built inside Intel SGX for Ethereum, and we have a what's called like a state-proof validator, which is something a bit specific with Algorand, where we're validating state proofs, essentially like a light client for state proofs running inside Intel SGX for Algorand. What this means we're able to do is we're able to validate both chains. So we're able to validate within Intel SGX, oh, this is the Ethereum chain, and okay, now I've got another block. This is another block in the in the sequence. It's valid.
Yeah. And I guess the important thing is that as an operator, because a lot of these bridges have been hacked. Yeah. Right? As an operator, in this case, we don't have access to the keys. We don't have access to the data. We can't interfere with the process. And somebody who gets onto our servers can't do that either.
I mean, that's the key property we're looking for, right? Is that essentially, like, reducing trust in the operator, right? Or even you can even argue almost eliminating trust, right? At least from like a this actually happened over here, so therefore something's happening over there perspective on the destination chain.
Silent data.
I mean, silent data. So yeah, you mentioned oracles in the very beginning of the conversation. So actually, what we're building at the moment, we're currently kind of in a bit of an expansion with our silent data product. So the way that we're looking at this is that we can use Intel SGX to do attestations on private data. So an oracle-like service on private data. So we think oracles, as they stand, they work fairly well on public data, things like, you know, crypto pricing, TVL, all of these things. You can kind of just have a validator network and say, hey, here's what's happened off chain. I'm going to publish that to a smart contract, and someone can actually look at that, right? Like, they can validate at least that the oracle has told the truth up to that point, and they can call multiple oracle providers to try and validate that. The space where we don't think oracles are working today very well is in private data, right? That we think there's a big opportunity in private data. Things like invoice systems, insurance, anything where there's some kind of authentication layer in front of the
credit checks for off-chain, either individuals or companies or background checks.
Yeah, KYC, AML, all of these different things. Feeding that into the blockchain. But what we don't want to do with private data, obviously, is, and we're talking public chains here, we don't want to feed the actual data onto the blockchain, because you can't feed KYC data onto the blockchain. Instead, what we want is the attestation that this user has been through a KYC process.
And we also don't want to share that data with a group of node validators, right? It could be private, personal, commercially sensitive. So we don't want Oracle operators to see this data either.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're describing almost the perfect use case, right, for blockchain and confidential computing. I mean, if we expand that out, so it's, I think of a specific use case, you've mentioned a few there, but we've expanded a little bit. Think about things like false insurance claims, just the one that pops into my head, right? So how do you match fraud across insurance companies? And that's a massive issue, right? How do we get into incentivized data collaboration? But taking all of that data, pulling it together, but still there's a privacy effort here. You've got to match private data off the chain using confidential computing to identify potential fraud and then bring it back. So the separation of, that privacy piece is really, really critical. And that's the sort of piece that we're solving. Without a confidential computing or privacy enhancing technology part there, that becomes insurmountable, especially given the privacy laws that we've introduced, especially here in Europe. And that's the challenge, right? And there's a lot of business cases there that if we can put that data to work in a private way, there's incentive and reward to do that, right? So break these silos down using confidential computing, for incentivized collaboration. And that's ultimately what the blockchain business is all about, right? How do we drive incentivized collaboration and remove the barriers to privacy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And that's what we're trying to do together, right?
Yeah, that exactly that. So what we found that we could do with SGX that we couldn't do with the software encryption technologies was actually plug the Oracle into existing APIs without requiring those APIs to be modified. So in an in a software encryption solution, whoever's exposing those APIs would have to do some other form of encryption or some clever stuff or have some SDK on their side. So we'd have to get the provider of the data to change in order for the data to remain private.
Yeah.
Whereas with Silent Data, we've been able to do that with existing APIs without asking them to modify them and still be able to provide a privacy-preserving Oracle service using that from that data.
Asking people to change what they do and they're changing their internal processes, you know, it's a revolving door, right? You're straight up.
Exactly. Especially in the enterprise world. And so that's why we picked also as our first use case one of the hardest places to change, which is banks. And so we integrated with open banking, obviously very sensitive financial data, and institutions which are not going to change their systems overnight, certainly not for to service small companies.
Yeah.
And so we were able to demonstrate that there. And Intel published a paper, and obviously we worked together on that, showing how Silent Data used Intel SGX to do that, and how it can be applied to other industries as well. So that's great. We'll share the link for that.
And there's also really good stuff around energy trading. I think that we did also as well. Ali, it's worth sharing that link. I think as part of this too, right? But I think from a certainly from an Intel perspective, I mean, our view, our investment in this area is strong. You're going to see an awful lot come from Intel over the next few years and others in the confidential computing space. The Intel Xeon. Here's where I do my shameless plug, right? The Intel Xeon Scalable lines are really coming fast, right? And then this technology is going to be hero featured, I think, in a lot of what's coming up. We've just released fourth gen. It's the first version of what we call TDX, which is that confidential VM piece that we talked about, right? Which is going to build those infrastructure layers for clouds. But these processes are an ideal foundation for building blockchain solutions. There's no doubt about that. They include a broad set of hardware-based security features, one of which we've talked a lot about here, which are super valuable for companies like Applied Blockchain and others that optimize the performance of cryptographic hashing and improve blockchain security generally, right? We've got new instruction sets. We've got AVX and other bits and pieces in there. And those scalable processors for blockchain are really there to provide hardware proof of trust, protect confidential information, and bring that security element without compromising performance, I think. And I think that's the match that works well for blockchains right now with some of this technology that we're bringing out over the next few years. Yeah. So I think the future is bright in the confidential computing space with Intel. You should stay connected with us, Adam.
No, we fully intend to. I mean, our view is that blockchain is still really early, both in terms of the technology and the use cases and how it's being rolled out and so on. And I think the same is true for this technology. Confidential computing, I think it's only just beginning to be understood and tested and expanded upon. And I think there's still a very long way to go. But the potential, and when people will understand the privacy levels that are possible even today, with this type of technology, they'll start demanding it more. And I think the inevitability with security and blockchain is also about trust. Is unfortunately where there are security vulnerabilities, things just tend to go wrong over time, right? People do exploit these vulnerabilities, and so we think that the technology is there to tighten things up on the trust level with blockchain, or on the privacy level with technologies like SGX. There's only going to be more of that over time.
Yeah, and I think, I started this intro by describing how I started in blockchain and moved to confidential computing, but that was 2016. I am only starting really to see real blockchain use cases now, right? I think emerging now. So I think what you say about this is still emerging, it is, but I'm starting to see some really, really interesting things by pretty big companies too. So I think it's a very much a space to watch.
Yeah.
Beyond cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Paul, I think this has been super interesting for me, at least. I hope for other people. Thank you for that. And I think it would be great to catch up. We've known each other for a year or two, maybe a year or two down the line. Given the changes that happen in this space, in these spaces, I think it would be great to catch up again and kind of see where things are relative to this conversation at some point in the future. In the podcast that we do, I normally ask guests at the end to give us some kind of recommendation for, I don't know, a book, a podcast, a speaker, somebody that you've seen or something that you've come across there that's inspired you. Have you got anything you'd like to share?
I saw a great band on Wednesday night in Dublin called The Betts, a New Zealand band, which I thought blew me away. They were unbelievable. I'm a big sports fan, like soccer fan. I listen to a lot of sports podcasts. I'm a big Liverpool fan, so anything to do with Liverpool podcasts, if you want to get through that pain. But my wife sent me a podcast recently that I hadn't heard of called The Teacher's Trial. It's about an Australian long-running court case, about a guy who apparently allegedly murdered his wife back in the 80s. But I just found it the most compelling listening over like 20 episodes. I'd go walk my dog with this on, and the dog would tap me on the leg at some point and say, "Can we please go home? I'm knackered now. I don't want to walk anymore." Right? Well, then, so that podcast was quite good.
Amazing! I love those kind of podcasts. I'm going to check this one out, and I also listen to one when I'm walking the dog.
A new one for me, right? The Teacher's Trial, but I won't give any spoilers. But it was big in the news in Australia recently. But ultimately, it was a guy who would have got away with it outside of this book.
Don't say any more. We're going to listen to it. But usually when I get home, if the dog's been on a really long walk, my wife will say, "What were you listening to?" And if it's taken a long time,
I'm a great reader as well. I like to read books. I don't like audio books and stuff like that. But I do a lot of long distance cycling, and I've started thinking about should I start to listen to audio books when I'm on the bike and stuff like that. But The Teacher's Trial was really, really good. So I think a lot of your listeners will get a lot out of that.
Amazing.
And maybe I'm just too late. Maybe I'm just too late to it. Everybody's heard it already. Maybe that's also something as well.
No, you never know. Okay, good. Paul, thank you very much. Thanks again for your time. It's really appreciated. And thank you very much.
I look forward to that beer you only added at this point. It must be well overdue at this point.
Great. Okay. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Applied Blockchain Podcast. Make sure you follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter for more updates. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, please let us know by leaving a review and clicking subscribe. Until next time.